Commissioner, what was his name?
Salazar.
That's right. Commissioner Salazar. He couldn't have been friendlier, more humorous, just, and so appearing when we first talked. He said, and his bottom line on this, by this time the owner of the towing company was saying, look, all I want is to get the damn car out of my lot and so on. I don't want any money. I just bought this because I can't have the car in the lot. And so I said, well, fine, well, then give it to me. and he said, no, I can't do that without a release from the police. Well, the police wouldn't give a release. So we agreed in the court the first time we went. We agreed that we would settle this out of court, that I would go and get the car back, and that it would be a wash as far as this small claims suit against me. Not necessarily the other one. And anyway, the police refused to do it unless I went down there. In the meantime, they brought charges against me because obviously you can't take not the police department, but the DA. Oh. I mean, in theory, you see, driving without a license is supposedly a misdemeanor. And so, anyway, those charges were dropped in the interest of justice when I explained the circumstances, and mainly when they learned, which I didn't tell them, but when they learned that I already had a license, that I had gotten a license, I had bowed my neck to the yoke, and so on. Anyway, they were dropped, so there was absolutely no basis for any of this. I had a disagreement with the state of California, and so on. The second time that we went, so we had to go to court again because I didn't get the car and the guy. So this time, small claims court to find out, because this commissioner said, I hope I never see you again, you know, in a friendly way. But I mean, he said,
this was their suit, the towing company's suit against you.
That's right. And he said, look, you know, get this settled, and I hope I don't have to see you again, but we'll set a date 2 weeks in the future in case you're not. Then. This is just, I mean, it just goes on. It becomes like, but then I went back to court, and Bill, what's his name, Sinclair, I think the owner of the North County Towing didn't show up, and I think probably on purpose. He didn't show up at the thing, which meant that I had the case dismissed, the second time he did show up. And Salazar said, well, I'll take it under advisement. We explained that, you know, I couldn't. And this time, Salazar sent in the judgment, and the judgment was, pay him the money. Pay him $1,100, which is more than the thing, which the guy had said he didn't want. So then, I had to appeal that, pay the cost for that, and so on, appeal it. When I went to the appeal, the towing company didn't show up, and so the thing was reversed on appeal. Mm-hmm. Then I get the notice of the reverse on appeal, and they reverse, the clerk reverses the thing. So they say defendant when they mean plaintiff, and they mean plaintiff with the defendant, and I had to get that corrected. In the meantime, I've filed a complaint with the grand jury. I get a letter back from the grand jury saying, we've checked with the police. And the police, and your special hearing was when you called up on November 24th and 25th, and they told you, they don't add this, they just said, your special hearing is when Officer Newman called up, told you that you couldn't have a special hearing. That was it. And so that's the situation. I mean, that is from our grand jury. Now, I'm finally getting to the point. The grand jury is, as far as I know, the juries, grand and petty jury, the trial jury, are our only instrument. When government breaks the law and steps as far out of line as our government is now, and the reason for that we would certainly go into in any program that I did, but I believe it's because our political system, in other words, our constitution and our laws, are diametrically opposed to our economic system. I think that is the systemic reason why the cops are doing it. It's not because they're bad guys. It's not because the judges are bad guys and so on. It's because what the real order of our, and legal order as well, because the law follows, has to follow politics, and politics follows economics. But the real order that they're following is capitalism. Capitalism creates a corporation of the state. It makes a sovereign of the state and makes us subjects. And we are no longer sovereign, as the Constitution says. We are subjects. So people who are running around, as I did myself not so long ago, saying, we're the sovereigns, and we're the ones who should be, and you serve us, you, the police, are our servants because we employ... Nonsense. They are employed by the corporate state and city and county and so on of Santa Cruz or California or the USA, and they are employed by that. And their job is to make as much money and save as much money to their employer as possible. And this is all about money. And it has nothing. So what do we have to do? If we want to really be effective, as opposed to saying, people have to stand up and say, and send a message, and say this and that, and wait till the next election. The next person who goes in, let's get it all through our heads, the next person who goes in is going to be no better than this person. Really, the differences between them are practically invisible. What we need to do is to get back citizen control of the legal system. Now, the only instrument that I know of, constitutional instrument, is the grand jury and the trial jury. The trial jury through jury nullification, and the grand jury because they're empowered to investigate all of these things. They're empowered to investigate government, and they're our watchdog in regard to government. Now, what's happened is that they've been turned completely into a rubber stamp for the government. Now, why has that happened? That's happened because, and I looked it up in the Constitution, the only thing that it says about the grand jury in the Constitution is, a grand jury shall be chosen not less than once a year, or maybe it's not more than once a year, but because I know now that in this county they're chosen every 18 months, and I've heard that exists before. But I've never met a grand jury that was worth its salt. They're all intimidated. They're all scared. Why? They're chosen by the DA and the judge, and they're chosen from the most, you know, from the most, what can I say, docile elements. I don't want to be too offensive, but obviously from the most docile elements in the community. Well, I was told by one grand jury in Mendocino County, I was told, we can't possibly indict this judge who is clearly guilty. I mean, I was there with a police officer, with a retired police officer preferring charges, making a complaint against it, and they said, oh, we can't do that. We could be liable to be sued. How the heck can a grand jury be sued? I mean, even the people on the, not only do the people at large not know what the grand jury is or what it does, even the people on the grand jury actually think that they can be sued by simply finding that there is material for an indictment. That's all the grand jury does. The grand jury when they indict, I mean, a so-called grand jury indictment simply means we've looked into the information and we believe that there is substance here for a trial, which then needs to be tried. You know, it's like impeaching the president. Impeachment doesn't mean that you find that the president has been found guilty, only that he's been found, you know, that it's been found enough dirt has been found on him to warrant a trial.
In fact, yeah, the House of Representatives impeaches the president by a two-thirds vote, and then the Senate holds a trial at which it may or may not convict the president. Almost happened in 1868, but not quite. But let's get back to what we can do with the radio medium, right, to get this kind of these legal abuses right, dealt with.
That's what I definitely wanted. Now, for instance, my story, what I'm trying to show with the story about the car is that if I can get lost, I mean, what I'm faced with is a total array, the entire county, basically. All of the organs that are supposed to be taking care of this, that are supposed to be checks and balances on each other, in fact, they're all unequivocally speaking with one voice, which is actually the same thing, right? So looking at this systemically, rather than saying my car, and no, I'm going to get justice somewhere along the line if I have to go to the Supreme Court and so on, which I've tried, and believe me, I've tried all that stuff. I don't think it works. I think that what we need to do as a community, I need, for instance, outreach to people who know about the initiative process. Now, there are plenty of those people who are much more qualified than I am, where we can start an initiative and basically change the law about, make a law, because the law doesn't exist in the Constitution, about how do we choose the grand jury. Make it an elective post would be my suggestion, but there may be better suggestions out there. And I think that you see, with that, we solve not just the problem, not just my problem with the car, but any problem that a citizen has with a government that's out of control. We basically put the citizens in a position of deciding between the economic system and the rules of the economic, the Uniform Commercial Code, and the Constitution. You know, and the people who feel that, that when the Uniform Commercial Code works in a certain way, it's working to the destruction of the American Republic. People talk about email and all the rest. That's not true. Email is one-on-one. I mean, it's and besides, it only refers to people who've got email. I don't happen to have it. So I feel that what we need, what the radio needs to be, there was a book published in Belgium, I think, called Radio is My Bomb. So I think radio is the most revolutionary thing that we can do. We've got to get not one radio, but obviously it starts. It starts in our community. The only way to think generally and act locally is I believe is radio, and we have to do it. We have to do it locally to show that it can be done. We need 10,000, we need 50,000 radio stations in this country, and with people saying all kinds of things and all kinds of baloney. You know, it doesn't really. It's much more important to open up the floodgates and let people say what they have to say, so that it can be demolished. It's only when you get repression of the kind that we have now, I believe, on all radio stations that I know of. There's repression. There are people, and people are being forced undercover by repression. And what happens undercover? They go into beer parlors. You know, they go into beer parlors, and eventually, when the repression explodes, instead of getting their crap dealt with at a level where it is verbal. And the example, I think I gave you the example last time I was here of the students at Venice High School coming in and saying that the high school should be burned to the ground, and of the flack I took from some of the people that worked at the station. My God, we can't do this. I said, why not? As long as we're talking about it, and as long as we deal with words the way they should be dealt with, which is that they are making a statement. They're making, and we better pay attention before it turns into fire.
Now, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz and free radio stations across the country have been giving an added dimension to free speech. And I think I tend to agree with you that, although there's some who would say that free speech, by giving people a kind of an escape valve, you let them out of the pressure cooker so that the real reforms, the real explosion that should happen doesn't happen. That was, of course, the position of some radicals earlier in the century. But let's talk about how you would use the radio. In fact, let's try to use the radio right now as you would like to use it in terms of discussing these issues. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, listeners, and we're listening to Tom Reveille on the show Bathrob Spears Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, every Sunday from 11 to 1:30. We blast at you. And our call-in number is 423-5361 for those of you who want to join this discussion. So Tom, I understand that you would be suggesting to the audience, are you suggesting a discussion of these issues? Not quite. You're not really talking.
No.
You're not gonna, now, what do you want people to call in and talk to you about?
The form would be the following. I've illustrated with a problem of mine. Now, if I were a little bit more, we could talk about a problem of yours. We could talk about the problem, any problem that you're dealing with, whether it's the shooting of someone. What is it that we do? How can we attack this as opposed to attacking a symptom? And finding a certain number of villains or culprits or heavies or whatever, and being satisfied with that, and saying, you know, as Bob said at the end of the last call, he said, you know, how long will it be before we stand up and say this and that? Well, what does it matter if we do stand up? I mean, Bob's obviously standing up, but both Bobs are standing up and so on, and a lot of other people in the community are standing up and saying, how do we get to be effective? I'm a fanatic on effectiveness, partly because it's quite painful for me to even get down here or to do anything in community action and so on. So personally, I don't have a career in radio that I'm worrying about or anything like that. I want to be effective. I've always wanted to be effective. I'm a Capricorn.
So Now, it probably would not be effective to ask people to call in to discuss how to be effective. Or maybe it would. I'm not sure.
No, let me show you how it would work, Bob. Now, you know, people would be asked to call in with a problem, and then we'd talk about it. We'd talk about the problem and see what. I had my car stolen. Okay. Now, this happened and that happened and so on. And I don't know whether I should go to court. I don't know whether I should do this and that. What can we do? What can we do to stop them? A judge is being abusive in a certain case and so on. Or the review board is the only thing that we can do to rail against them and wait for the next election or what?
Well, let's ask you, you listeners out there. Do you have anything that you want some help with? I mean, are you concerned about you know, a specific abuse that's happened to you recently? Why don't you give us a call here at 423-5361, and we can use your case to talk about it. Now, of course, I see one of the problems here is that, first of all, what kind of expertise do we have? Well, you know, we are, neither of us have college degrees in law. Not that that would probably make us more cretins than experts, probably, but nonetheless, the problem with that kind of radio discussion is that it also happens very publicly. You're asking people to talk about personal details of their problems, in a very open way. I think some of us will do that, and I think it should be done. I think that can actually be very helpful. But as you can see, the lines are not yet lighting up with all you listeners giving us your problems. Have you been messed with by the police? Do you feel that you've been subjected to an injustice in the last year, that you'd like to do something about it, but you don't know what to do?
What about the injustices you've been talking about, Bob? Until somebody calls up, and if no one calls up, I would like to know how many people are out there. You see, that's another question I have, is how many people are out there, and what kind of knowledge do we have? Because in order for a radio station to work, I was going to come down here, for instance. One of my ideas about coming down here was to simply have people call in. They don't have to say anything. Just call in and tell us that you're listening and see what kind of tally we got. And I was going to say, if a dozen people call in, it's worth doing. If less than a dozen people call in, it probably isn't worth the effort. You know, certainly not from my point of view. But the idea, you see, is to create a war room. It's to create a place where the community can meet and strategize, and you can know that you are not alone.
Well, it's possible we aren't alone. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I have a problem.
You have a problem?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Recently, I'm a single mother of three, and I was recently separated, well, not recently, actually several years ago. I've been separated from my husband and the father of one of my children. And so there are all these court orders for child support, and sometimes I get child support and sometimes I don't. Well, just recently, District Attorney Art Danner's Family Support Division office sent out all these letters all over the county to the absent parents, which are usually fathers, not exclusively, of course. And this letter, you know, said, either pay up thousands and thousands of dollars, whatever it is, back support that they say he owes, or he'll be facing a year in jail. And, you know, he got this letter, and the first thing he did was to call me up and abuse me over the telephone about it, that it was, you know, all my fault.
Excuse me, he called up and did what over the telephone?
He spoke very abusively towards me.
Right.
Over the telephone. I know that he's got his budget to balance, but, you know, this letter was sent out, I mean... to me, the effect on my family life was to create a huge disruption in what were already sort of delicate alliances that had been formed, you know, mutual alliances to for the care of our common child. I'll take my answer off the air.
Oh, well, no, already. I'm not quite sure, you know, in a situation like that where, again, it seems as though the projected title for my show is Survival System.
Go ahead.
And here we have, if I understood you correctly, we have an example of the punitive side of the DA's office. They come out with a letter basically threatening everybody, if you don't come up with this money, whether you've got it or not, you're going to jail. And it sounds like a super idiotic thing to do. I mean, I think you're relatively lucky that your husband just called up and abused you, although it wasn't very smart on his part. He could have fled the county, I suppose. I don't know, unless he was afraid. Anyway, I don't know myself, although you see, the purpose of this is not that I'm the answer man. The purpose of this show would be to first of all to create a community of interest, reaching out into the community for anyone who has any ideas about that. I have to tell you that's not in my area of expertise, and so that beyond calling the DA's office and telling them of your experience and having as many people do that who have adverse experiences as possible, I really don't have much to suggest, but I think that the idea of the show, I think that's about all I can say about your case, but the idea of the show would be precisely that one would come to a community. That's what the radio is, as far as I'm concerned. It's potentially the body of the community, and it's a way that someone who has a problem can come and get the benefit and the resources that exist in the community. I feel I have a certain amount of experience, even though I'm not a, as Bob points out, I'm not a graduate of a law school, but I do have a quarter of a century of fighting for my freedom in this country, and getting very close to despair, and which is probably where I am now. But I feel that if anything can be accomplished, it can only be accomplished by people working together, by our swapping our ideas.
So in essence, I guess what you're saying, Tom, and what we're trying to say here is that if folks out in the community have suggestions as to what our caller can do in this situation, or have had similar experiences, or want to get together with her to form a common front on this issue, they should definitely call in. And to some extent, that's what I do with my show. I mean, though it may seem that I put out a lot of information, the information is a way for people who have had problems to call in and talk about specifics as well. So I think I'm not entirely a stranger to your notion of using the radio as a sort of a not just a community forum, but a community resource to change the society, not just to talk about it. I'm about to make another call now. Is there more you want to say on this issue? Or let me put it this way: let's give this another 5 minutes in case anybody has anything they want to bring to the radio, and you can give us a call here at 423-5361 around either the issue that you just heard from the caller about the district attorney's new threat to, I guess it's spouses not paying child support. I guess it's not that people shouldn't pay child support. I understand that that's not the issue. The issue is this is a sudden move by the district attorney's office that's resulted in pressure on poor mothers and fathers throughout the county.
Yes, it's what this society does best, which is you've got to, but you can't, right? In other words, it doesn't matter whether you have the money. If you don't have the money, we'll throw you in jail. And we say the debtor's prison has been abolished. But again, this is something that is done, couldn't happen under the Constitution, does happen under capitalism. And therefore, we have to keep working on that, I believe, on that discrepancy, on that antithesis, really. We have an anti-constitutional system in place. And believe me that when our political system is at war with our economic system, it's the economic system that wins every single time. And the people are making a desperate mistake who believe that they can enforce the Constitution against the bank.
Well, so you've been listening to Tom Reveille, who may well be getting his own show on the air so you can actually engage in this kind of activist activity over a longer period of time. Although, again, if there are less than 12 people listening, we're all going home and we're going to go to sleep. So call immediately and tell us if you're listening.
Well,
One of the things we can do, and one of the things you can do, Bob, and I don't think that the radio station has paid enough attention to this, and that is promotion. I mean, people have to know you're here before they can, and of course we have to be able to get out to them in a way that, as I was telling you earlier, that's a little clearer than it is in my home, because it simply is, you know, it's simply, you can't listen to it because of the static and so on. Sometimes it's a little clearer. But we have to work out some technical problems. And I can assure you that if I get a chance to do this show, I will do whatever is necessary to promote it so that as many people as possible know about it, and then we'll have to rely on word of mouth after that. But it, you know, obviously this kind of a show falls flat unless it's a dialogue, unless it's a multi-log.
So hear ye, Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, and anyone else interested in this. You're tuned to Free Radio, of course, 96.3 FM, and for those of you who want to put public service announcements in, you can give a call to the Free Radio voicemail at 427-4523. Our email address is frsc@cruzio.com. Our snail mail address is P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And our phone number, if you want to call in and discuss anything that Tom has been talking about, present a problem, or talk about anything else that we've been discussing in the last hour and a half, that calling number, and the lines are open, is 423-5361. This weekend we had a benefit for the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, and one of our big singers was Carol Denny, a wonderful, her voice is as strong as her principles, which I guess is rare. And here's one of the songs that she sang from her tape, Failure to Disperse. Haven't played it for a while because I lost the tape. Well, I had to get another one. I got one on Friday night. And here's the song, Ready for Christmas.
Yeah. That's Carol Denny's Failure to Disperse. We actually have gotten a couple of phone calls while that song was on. So a few of you are listening to us. Thank you very much, and thank you for letting us know about it. We also got a call while we were off the air from David Silva, who is pretty soon going to give us the update on the upcoming city council meeting on Tuesday. Not only does the Citizens Police Review Board do its little smoke and mirrors number on Monday at 5:30, but the city council meets at 3:30 and at 7 on Tuesday evening, both of them at City Hall, 809 Center Street, across from the main library and from the Civic Auditorium, for those of you who are interested in that. There's been a lot of media coverage recently of the beach flats. You may recall picking up your Metro, and the last two issues of the Metro have had kind of front cover stories about the beach flats. Future tense. T-E-N-S-E, Beach Flats residents worry about the city's plans to rebuild their neighborhood. That was in the April 29th to May 6th Metro. And then more recently, in the latest Metro, there's a kind of a Canfield article on Charlie Canfield, who's the head of the Seaside Company. And I've had on my show before Phil Baer of the Beach Flats area, an activist, a landlord, an interested citizen, and something of an expert, it looks like to me, on the Beach Flats redevelopment plan. He's kind of gone over a lot of the details in the past shows, but I wanted him to talk with us this time about the how the media is covering it. What kind of, are we getting the straight story from the Metro, from also, of course, the latest issue of the Santa Cruz Comic News has Beach Flats as a major item. And it's, of course, coming up in occasional articles in the Sentinel. So I'm going to give Phil a call now. Hopefully he will be home. And we can talk to him about how is the media covering the Beach Flats. Can we believe what we hear in the paper? Looks like at the crucial moment, our phone line went out again. Boy, how I hate this.
You have no sound.
Yeah, I've just been told we have no sound. So we are back with the sound, however, but we can't get a hold of our expert on the beach flats. What a bummer. It could be our calling out facilities aren't operational. Perhaps if somebody wants to call in, we can hear you. We might want to try that. Give us a call at 423-5361. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 96.3 FM. And we have a call coming in. Will we be able to hear it? We'll see. Yeah, that buzz you heard was our phone line telling us to buzz off. So we're going to hope that technicians come running in, and if they do, we'll be able to open up the phone lines before the end of the show. Otherwise, we're going to continue kind of using the materials we have before us. Pepper spray is an item that's attracted my interest more than once. It's something used by the police and yet has been criticized by numerous agencies as being deadly, or certainly of uncertain result in terms of its health value, I should say, its lethality. Is it safe, has been the question. And I just got a copy of the latest CopWatch reports, an article by Andrea Pritchett I found very interesting. I wanted to pass it on to you. Pepper spray struggles continue. Talks about the situation in Berkeley, but it would be nice to find a situation here in Santa Cruz. I mean, we have a similar situation. Pepper spray is not only used in Santa Cruz, it isn't even monitored. In Berkeley, they actually monitor the use of pepper spray much more closely than they do here. And we brought this issue to the Citizens Police Review Board repeatedly. Nick Whitehead of Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAM, an organization concerned with police misconduct, has gone to the Citizens Police Review Board and spoken to them, urging them to look into pepper spray, to consider it. I don't think they've held one hearing on the issue. They politely nod, and then they move on to whatever else they're doing or not doing. Anyway, this article is in the spring-winter issue of a CopWatch report from Berkeley, and it's by CopWatcher Andrea Pritchett. Although the Berkeley City Council stopped short of banning police use of pepper spray, the issue is far from being resolved. After almost 2 years of pressure and campaigning by CopWatch and other community organizations, the council rejected two proposals. Unofficially, the idea of banning pepper spray was blocked by council member Linda Mayo, who never seriously entertained the idea. Instead, at the November 5th meeting last fall, she proposed a measure which would place pepper spray higher up on the continuum of force and restrict its use to those situations in which lethal force is justified. But Councilmember Amadel Sharik had already made it clear that under no circumstances would she support the use of untested chemical weapons against the people of Berkeley. Since the two council members were unable to reach a compromise, no action restricting the use of pepper spray was taken by the council, even though a majority of members recognize that the current situation is unacceptable. This is up in Berkeley at the Berkeley City Council. At an earlier meeting, however, Councilmember Donna Spring successfully called for interim measures intended to help the council keep track of the use of pepper spray by police. Now, each police use of pepper spray in Berkeley must be reported directly to the city council. Also, police canisters of pepper spray are to be fitted with seals that must be broken in order for the spray to be used. Unfortunately, the city council considered the issue before the research findings of John and Hazel Coleridge were made known. The day after the large public hearing on October 22nd, CopWatch received a letter from Ms. Coleridge explaining that she and her husband had been observing the effects of capsaicin, the active ingredient in pepper spray, for over 30 years. As emeritus professors of physiology and as medical doctors, the Coleridges have conducted much of the research on capsaicin. According to their findings, capsaicin can provoke, quote, a sudden decrease in heart rate and cardiac output and a profound fall in blood pressure. In experiments in anesthetized animals, this decrease in heart rate induced when the active agent, capsaicin, stimulates airway nerve endings is accompanied by slowing or even block of the normal sequence of electrical conduction through the heart. This change, although transient, may have the potential for inducing life-threatening arrhythmias, irregular heartbeats, even in healthy people, especially if they are physically stressed in the immediate aftermath of pepper spray exposure. Although the council is aware of the fact that the Coleridges have offered to meet with them, they have yet to accept their offer. Incidents of pepper spray use continue to provide evidence of its dangers. One incident stands out because of the unusual outcome of its use. On September 22, 1997, Dana LeConte of Oregon went on a hunting trip. According to his wife, Georgianne, he was stopped by police for speeding and was taken into custody for outstanding warrants. While in a holding cell, he was approached by deputies. In the ensuing scuffle, he was badly beaten. He was then handcuffed and pepper sprayed. Apparently, the spray caused his body to produce excessive mucus, which suppressed his breathing. Today, LeConte has severe brain damage as a result of oxygen deprivation. He is unable to care for himself, and his wife is struggling to go on while fighting for justice. In other developments, Copwatch has been told that an inmate in an Oregon jail died after being exposed to pepper spray. There was no indication of drugs or alcohol in his body. Copwatch provided Amnesty International with documentary evidence of abuse of young people in a detention facility in Kem County, California. The investigation is ongoing and concerns facilities across the country. Berkeley resident Freddie Frazier was scheduled to attend the Police Review Commission Board of Inquiry regarding their use of force, including pepper spray, against him last August. He never made it to the hearing because Berkeley Police Department officers detained him just before the hearing and drove him around in their car. Sounds like Deputy Thurber here in Santa Cruz County. He was never booked into the Berkeley jail, but he missed his hearing. The struggle to ban pepper spray will be focusing on the case of Mark Garcia in San Francisco. Almost 2 years ago, Garcia was beaten and pepper sprayed by SFPD officers. He died in custody, yet the San Francisco Office of Citizens Complaints still has not investigated the incident. The Garcia's family, along with the October 22nd Coalition and Police Watch, are calling on supporters to attend police commission hearings to pressure the city to investigate the case and to take action. The movement to ban pepper spray has spread to San Francisco and far beyond. For more information, call Police Watch at 415-543-9444. And locally, if you're interested in this issue, you can give a call to Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAN, at 475-2012. 475 Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAN, 2012. And of course, another direct way to deal with this is to call the Citizens Police Review Board at 429-3262 and demand they investigate and control the use of pepper spray. You might even go so far as to suggest that they ban the use of pepper spray. They have a 24-hour message line. You can call them any time of the day. Ask them to put this item on their agenda. You won't get it on their next agenda, which is, as I've mentioned, Monday at 5:30. But presumably, you will force them to log in some public concern about the issue. I'm really feeling turned off by the Citizens Police Review Board in terms of even attending their meetings myself, because the last time they threatened to arrest me. I suppose I should regard this as sort of a par for the course, but it had never happened at that particular body before. The City Council, certain members like Mike Rotkin, Scott Kennedy, have in the past threatened me with arrest, and that's fine. But the Citizens Police Review Board had never done that, and it was really quite a shock to see people that are supposed to be monitoring the police threatening to use the police to crush critics who are simply exercising basic free speech rights at their mic. So it's really a difficult situation. I encourage people to file complaints with the CPRB. I encourage people to call in their concerns. And if you're interested, I encourage you to even come to their meeting at 5:30 tomorrow, Monday. I also have been encouraging neighborhood organizations to get together, as in the Button Street shooting, and find their own roads to bringing these issues to public attention, since the Citizens Police Review Board seems to be a complete dead end and a complete drain on any kind of energy that you're putting out. As I've said, their latest little hoax is to pump up their public relations image by saying they're trying to get every police-related shooting reviewed. Now, as I've told you before, they have the power to do this now. They don't need to seek additional authority from the City Council. In fact, they aren't using it, and more important, they aren't using their investigative power, which they could use if they wanted to. That's much more important than simply reading over the reports of a police department supposedly trying to investigate itself. which, of course, was the reason the CPRB was created in the first place, because we didn't believe the police department could investigate itself. So you turn to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, a little item in the paper from Alameda County, April 22nd, San Francisco Chronicle. 2 dozen Oakland middle school students were sent to nearby hospitals yesterday morning after someone released a canister of pepper spray inside a school building. The incident occurred at Havens Court Middle School, 1390 66th Avenue, at about 11:30 a.m. The canister was apparently released in the hallway while classes were in session. Crystal Page, a school district spokeswoman, said 24 students and a teacher were sickened when fumes from the spray wafted into their classroom. Page said school district police identified a person believed to be responsible for the incident. She said she did not know whether the suspect, who is not a student at the school, could it have been a police officer? I doubt it, had been arrested. Paramedics and a hazardous materials team responded to the scene. The injured students and the teacher were taken to local hospitals, including Children's Hospital Oakland, after complaining of eye irritation, nausea, and asthma-like symptoms, Page said. Our preliminary reports from the hospitals is that most of the kids seem fine, Page said. And along these lines, Carol Denny, whose music you've heard on this show, who's also, you can read her her reports through me on Berkeley, civil rights violations on the Berkeley streets in the latest Street Spirit, and the latest May Street Spirit is now out. If you'd like to get a copy, just buy it from a homeless vendor downtown. Some of them are, hopefully will be selling it shortly. Carol Denny is also the author and editor of the Pepper Spray Times, a really wonderful, wildly funny satirical publication, now in its 14th issue. So I think there's a lot to be said about pepper spray, and unfortunately a lot to be done about pepper spray, more important.